This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. So let's start with the two that I found in my survey. I should solve my own problems. Here's my take on that, guys. Going to a therapist is not giving up on your own decision-making or control. You will solve your own problem. In fact, you have to do the bulk of the work. But what you can benefit from is another perspective. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. When I first began to look into writing a book on depression, more specifically, writing a book on depression or despair that's secret, camouflaged, or hidden away by an outstanding-looking, perfect-looking life, I found Andrew Solomon's TED Talk that he gave in 2013. That talk has now been viewed over 13 million times. And it's a phenomenal talk on how the secrecy of depression, feeling as if you need to not let anyone know that you struggled in the past or you're struggling now, not to be dragged into sadness or emptiness. And the talk also explains when he needed the help of others to literally pull him out of an incredibly deep depression. Today on Self-Work, I'm going to reference this talk, but we're mainly going to focus on what some have called stigma, but also what I feel is even more dangerous, a denial of struggle, which then leads to the secrecy. We'll go over the reasons people give for not revealing their depression, and I'll certainly give you my perspective on those very reasons. The name of Solomon's talk, interestingly enough, was Depression, the Secret We Share. Obviously, I so agree. Because now in 2024, in the responses from my TEDx talk, which I'm going to share with you today, I have found that same tendency, keeping depression a secret. I thought we'd get to a listener email today, but as I was working on this episode, I found that I didn't have time for it. So we'll get back to that next week. Let's first hear from AG1, which I drink almost every day before I do anything else. And I know I'm starting out the day in a healthy way. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why, for years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword, it's a commitment. And at each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of their manufacturing, and sustainable practices. Taking care of your health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing all those multiple health supplements, like your multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more, in just one simple scoop. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for their quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I drink every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try it and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/self-work. Again, that's drinkag1.com/self-work. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. To say I've been honored by the outpouring of thumbs up and views and interesting and open comments in response to my TEDx is an understatement. But by far the most responded to comment, and that comment was not by me, is this one. it's actually a question. Now, remember, my TEDx is called How to Recognize Perfectly Hidden Depression. And then I also talk about how suicidal thinking is much more common than we realize. And I'm encouraging people to be more transparent with one another. Anyway, here's the question. Is it bad of me to say that it's a little comforting to know so many other people are feeling this way? Now, that comment got 949 responses, at least as of the time I am recording this. They've either answered the question or have liked the question, meaning they wanted to show their support for the commenter and for the question. In fact, another commenter said, "What a soothing pool of fellow feelings in this thread you provoked by your comment. Thank you again and again." So this commenter got such support for just asking the question, gosh, is it okay that I realize I feel a little comfort from the fact that other people are struggling like I am? The gratitude was abundant, and many people voiced their relief and sense of kinship that so many others have been secretly struggling. I mentioned Andrew Solomon's TED Talk in the intro. Here's what he had to say about the difference between people with depression who could reveal it and those who couldn't. And by the way, he writes incredibly beautifully. Let me make sure you understand, Andrew Solomon is writing about his own experience. He has suffered from intensely deep depressions, and he talks about it in his TED Talk, which I thoroughly recommend you go watch. But I pull this quote. "What I came up with over time was that the people who deny their experience and say, 'I was depressed a long time ago. I never want to think about it again. I'm not going to look at it, and I'm just going to get on with my life.' Ironically, those are the people who are most enslaved by what they have. Shutting out the depression strengthens it. While you hide from it, it grows. And the people who do better are the ones who are able to tolerate the fact that they have this condition. Those who can tolerate the depression are the ones who achieve resilience." If you've listened to self-work for a while, you know that I so totally agree with this. Depression that you push away grows more potent. Trauma that you push away grows more potent. It's like that closet in your house that if you open the closet door and things come out when you do that, they fall on the floor. You've got so much stuffed in there. That same thing happens in your psyche with painful emotions that you are trying to hide, closet away, whatever. If you've watched my TEDx, I state, "It won't be long before we all either personally know or know of someone who died by suicide while their life looked great. In fact, you may already know someone. It doesn't matter what race, what ethnicity, what gender identification, whether married or single, whether a parent or not, whether a celebrity. All suicides are horrible and leave loved ones with so many questions, so much anger, sadness, shame, confusion, guilt. When someone feels their pain is intolerable or unfixable, they can take their own lives to stop that pain. There may have been warning signs, previous attempts, even hospitalizations that give loved ones a heads up about what's going on so they can help in any way possible, but sometimes not." But today's episode isn't on suicide. It's on the very admitting of depression in the first place. Just why is that so hard for so many? I did my own survey years ago and found mostly what fancier surveys have found. Men especially thought they should solve their own problems. That's why they didn't talk about it or go to therapy. Women feared social ramifications of going for help. I'll talk about these two in a bit, but I found another article in Healthline that named other barriers, which I thought we'd talk about. Certainly these are ones that come from a starting point that's rational and understandable. It's not that I think it's easy to come into therapy or talk about your vulnerabilities. I don't. I've been on the other side of the therapeutic relationship. I've been sitting on the sofa myself. I know how hard it is. But here I'm quoting from Healthline. "One of the things that might serve as a barrier for you to talk about it or be open about it, it came on so gradually I hardly noticed. I get this. I've used the analogy myself that it's as if the lights are being turned down so slowly in a room that you don't realize how hard you're actually having to squint to see. Now, some depressions come on with a rush, especially those that are tied into a sudden loss or unwelcome change. but the slower kind. These folks don't see the changes in themselves. They don't get the social support that people who have acute loss can often get. If your house burns down, people are going to understand you'd be depressed. But if you're in a situation with a teen who's using drugs, or you have a job where, try as you might, you're getting overlooked for promotion and you're slugging at it day after day, those types of disappointments and frustrations can wear away at any of us. But since they're more chronic or not as dramatic, you may not get the social support, and so you feel like you need to look okay or even fine. So again, you might not tell or seek help or reveal. You just stuff it in that closet because it came on so gradually. Here's number two. I don't trust doctors. I've heard this a lot. People may have been misdiagnosed or mistreated by medical professionals who didn't recognize their symptoms or regard you with respect. Your encounters with medical professionals may have left you feeling very overlooked, stereotyped. I hear this a lot with obesity patients, or with anyone who the doctors can't figure out what's wrong, with women in general, with racial or ethnic minorities. There aren't enough doctors who look like you, and so there's distrust. And often that distrust is actually well-earned. I've also heard from people who are friends with doctors or medical professionals and overhear them talking about their patients in a very kind of offhanded or critical manner. And so you can come away from that saying, well, if that's how doctors feel, I'm not going to go. But please realize there are really good doctors out there. And I'll have some of my answers to these issues in a minute. So let's go on to the third problem. I'm afraid of what will happen if I talk about a mental health struggle. Some people don't disclose depression symptoms because there can be harmful repercussions if they do, like mothers who don't want their children taken away from them. In some places, mental health conditions may lead you to an encounter with law enforcement, which can be dangerous and frightening. So you might just hide what you're struggling with because you don't want anything like that to happen. Here's number four, I don't want to be a burden. People sometimes feel a sense of guilt when they seek treatment or ask for help. This might be especially true for teens or even older adults who don't want to worry people that care about them. And Healthline made this point. I thought it was interesting. People with chronic illnesses don't want to add something else to their list of medical conditions they're discussing with a physician. So if the physician doesn't bring it up, hey, how are you doing with this? This is kind of a rough illness to have. Cancer, diabetes, MS, whatever it happens to be, do you really want to talk about also the mental and emotional problems that come with it? You don't want to be a burden. Here's another one. I'm embarrassed to talk about it. Healthline says that public health campaigns have improved how people see mood disorders. I mean, you can't turn on the television without seeing umpteen hundred advertisements for medications. But attitudes toward mental health still vary from place to place, and there's still stigma in a lot of those communities. Here's another one that Healthline states, I don't want to take medications. Yes, antidepressant medications are commonly prescribed treatments here in the U.S., but not everyone living with depression has them as part of their treatment plan. In fact, I, for example, have some people on antidepressants, but it is rarely my first go-to. When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. Okay, so let's go back and I'll do my best to answer these hurdles or objections and maybe even offer some practical things to do. So let's start with the two that I found in my survey. I should solve my own problems. Here's my take on that, guys. Going to a therapist is not giving up on your own decision-making or control. You will solve your own problem. In fact, you have to do the bulk of the work. But what you can benefit from is another perspective, especially if you've tried to solve the problem and it's simply not solved. Haven't you ever had the experience of wondering why you couldn't make something work? You show it to someone else and they say, well, have you tried X? And you feel kind of stupid. Well, no, I hadn't tried X. Therapists can be thought of as consultants, as another perspective, plain and simple. I had someone fairly recently in my office who had had a parent die very suddenly and unexpectedly. Well, what came up with his own child was that he was trying to get him to do something with him over the weekend. The child was complaining. He was a teenager. He didn't really want to do that. Now, they did end up doing it, and they both had a great time. But what happened was the parent got really angry, way, way out of proportion to what was going on. And I looked at him, and I said, well, don't you think that may have had something to do with the recent death of your own parent? And he looked at me, and he said, I hadn't even thought about that. Of course, he was grieving that his father had died and that there were things that they had never gotten to do together. So obviously, when he asked his son, hey, let's go do this, and it was met with, nah, not really, I don't want to, Dad, he blew up because that was more about his grief than his real anger with his son. Okay. So you can see, hopefully, how my perspective on that was helpful to him. And he looked at me and go, I don't know why I didn't think about that. That's what therapists can do, hopefully. Now, here's the second one I found in my survey. What will people think if they know I'm going to therapy? Now, I don't know. I can't say what your friends will think. I'm not sure. But neither are you. Maybe that's your own belief that's getting in your way. Maybe you think someone would be wasting money or time by seeking a therapist's perspective, but this is a surefire way to stay stuck. And I don't know many good decisions that are made from primarily fear, except maybe to run away from a grizzly bear. Maybe you're more afraid of what will come out of you than you're afraid of what others may think. Let me say that again. Maybe you're more afraid of actually what you'll say in therapy or what you might feel than you're afraid of what others might think. I cannot tell you the amount of people that I've said, well, if you just seek out one person that you can trust and say how you're feeling or that you're in therapy. But lo and behold, what they find out is that their friend is on antidepressants or their friend went to therapy or their cousin did the same, whatever. You'll find out that maybe people aren't talking about it, but they're taking care of themselves well, too. Okay, now let's start on the hurdles that Healthline talked about. It came on so fast, I didn't see it. Okay, maybe so. So, maybe you run a personal check of yourself. Are you more tired? Are you crankier than you used to be? Are you bailing out of doing things that a year ago you would have looked forward to doing? You can start to see it and then realize the longer whatever's causing it goes unfettered, then the harder it's going to be to dig it up and let it go. So even those slow-growing depressions, if you really take a look honestly and objectively at yourself, you can say, you know, I'm not the same person I was 6 months ago or a year ago. I'm not sure what's going on. It could be so many things. And of course, you need to check to make sure it's not a medical thing. But it could be some sort of emotional or mental imbalance or something that's working against you that you don't realize. All right. So now let's talk to the person who doesn't trust doctors. There's not much of a way around this except one that I can think of. Let's all recognize there's some absolutely fantastic doctors out there. But like every profession, there are some that have weaknesses that affect the way they doctor. So you can do this. You can go to a therapist first. It'll likely be easier to find someone who looks like you to a minority therapist or a therapist who is gay, whatever, or understands gay issues. So if you go to a therapist first and get comfortable with that, Often therapists have a working relationship with doctors in the area if you decide you might want to try medication or there's a suspicion that something medical might be going on. So if you go to the therapist first, then maybe you can circumvent some of those issues with medical providers. How about this one? I'm afraid of what will happen if I talk about mental health struggles. Obviously, this can be a problem in situations like custody fights and divorces, job evaluations, or taking family leave. I get it. I really do. Even we therapists have to sign something every year that says our mental health has been good. It's kind of ironic that if it hadn't been, if we'd gone into therapy ourselves and gotten treated, we'd have to deny it to maintain our license. You don't really, there's a bit of fudge room because it asks you if it kept you from providing quality service. But it's interesting. I get protecting the public. Of course, that's important, but it's a conundrum. But there are some who believe, and I said this in my TEDx, that if you reveal suicidal feelings to a therapist, you'll be locked up. That is not true. I promise you, there aren't enough psychiatric treatment facilities to treat everyone who has those thoughts. And therapy is the place to talk about them. If you're in imminent danger, that's the point where a therapist may need to contact a family member and break confidentiality. But that is something that the two of you would talk about together. We have a local case here in Arkansas about a psychiatrist who was highly unethical and did keep people in the psychiatric ward that were ready to go home or were asking to go home. And he is being sued. It was horrible the way he treated people. And of course, those things do happen, but it's far from normal. Here's the sixth hurdle. I don't want to be a burden. This is something you probably learned in your culture or family. But with healthy people, you talking about what you're struggling with isn't a burden because they don't take it on like it's theirs to fix, not at all. They offer you a place to talk. They give an opinion if you ask for it, but they go home to their problems and don't drag yours with them. Now, if someone isn't so healthy, that may happen and be unwelcome. Please, if you tell yourself regularly, I don't want to burden others, so I just simply won't talk about what's going on with me, you are robbing yourself and you're robbing maybe a friend of being able to say, hey, what's going on? Maybe I can help. Here's another one. I'm embarrassed to talk about it. Yes, I get this one as well. When you have something wrong with your eye and you can't see clearly, then you can blame your eye and wait for it to heal. You can even wear a patch where everyone can see that something's wrong with your eye, right? But what if you can't think straight because you're depressed and your thoughts are muddy or foggy feeling? Well, you can't see that. No one else can either. So do you think because others can't see it, they think, oh, well, this depression must be your fault. You must be weak or not trying hard enough. That line of thinking is very common, but I'd urge you to reconsider that. There are plenty of physical or medical illnesses that you just can't see. People can't see it overtly. And I've had clients say often to me, I wish my disease showed more. People don't know I'm not able to pick up my kids at school or whatever the struggle is. So they just think I'm a lousy mother. Maybe you have fibromyalgia or rheumatoid arthritis or some illness that comes and goes. Some days you can be active, others you can't. It can be very frustrating. What I'm trying to say is that depression can be just like that. It ebbs and flows. It can come and go. It can worsen and deepen and then lift a bit. Here's another quick point. It can be hard to accept that your depression may lie to you, that the very thoughts you're having about something aren't what you'd think if you weren't depressed. That's when you need to rely on someone you trust to tell you, hey, you know, you're not yourself. You're not thinking through this correctly. Bruce Springsteen, for example, says he relies a lot on his wife to help him see that he's cycling down into depression and literally says his listening to her has saved his life. Here's the last hurdle. I don't want to take medicine. Then don't. You don't have to, often at least. When I have someone new come in and they say this to me, I'll often say, okay, that's fine. Let's meet 3 or 4 times. I'll give you things to try that I know help with depression, or at least in my experience do. If you don't do them or you can't do them, or both you and I can see that you're not feeling differently or doing better, then maybe we need to have this medication talk again and reconsider. But exercise, eating well, sleeping well and enough, and that's a huge one, learning new skills with handling conflict, having some sort of emotional release, all of these can be much more important to a lessening of depression than medication. But realize that if you do go to a medical doctor, most of them are going to ask you if you want meds. Most psychologists are not licensed to prescribe medications. So when you come into therapy, that's not going to be the first line of treatment unless you're in some kind of emergency state. I hope this has been helpful to you, sort of challenging these ideas of why you would choose not to reveal your depression. I wanted to ask some of you who might be listening today, who might have identified with perfectly hidden depression, if you would like to email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. I'm actually writing a second book, and I would love to interview a few more people who've identified, again, with perfectly hidden depression. That's askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. Feel free to join my Facebook closed group at facebook.com/groups/selfwork. And remember, I'd love to come speak to your book club, your association, your work group about depression, perfectionism, suicide intervention and prevention. Just let me know. Thank you so much for being here. As always, please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.